Detroit isn't the only Michigan city facing unfunded pension liabilities and retiree debt. In fact, a surprising number of cities all across our state are facing huge financial problems. We find out more coming up next. This is Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. A lot of attention has been paid to Detroit's bankruptcy. But if you're in Ann Arbor, Grand Rapids, even Bloomfield Hills, it is so easy to look at Detroit's problem as its problem. But here's a reality check. Detroit is not alone. It's not only Michigan's largest city facing enormous budget challenges. Unfunded liabilities and retiree debt are piling up all over Michigan. Ted Roloffs is a contributing writer to Bridge Magazine. His piece is entitled Detroit, Coming to a City Near You. He joins us now. Hi, Ted.
Good to be with you.
And also joining us is John Pato. He's a bankruptcy expert at the University of Michigan. Hello, John. Good to have you with us.
Happy to be here.
Ted, I'd like to start with you, kind of give us a sense of what you've put into this story on Bridge, Detroit Coming to a City Near You. You've looked at numbers. You dug into retiree debt and unfunded liabilities in communities all across Michigan. What did you find?
Well, I think to put this in the context of the city that's gotten all the attention, Detroit, now into bankruptcy, I think it's important to look at the forces that put Detroit in that situation and understand how much they apply to other cities across the state, including major urban areas like Grand Rapids, Lansing, Saginaw, Flint, but also maybe surprisingly some smaller communities that one wouldn't necessarily associate with unfunded pension, unfunded retiree health care. So that was the purpose of what we did. And I guess to put it in the simplest terms, what we found is that Detroit remains the extreme example of what can happen, but there are other cities, many cities in Michigan, that are going to be dealing with significant financial stress, likely for many years, because of unfunded pension and unfunded retiree health care.
And in dollars term, as you report in your piece, we're looking at excluding Detroit, unfunded legacy debt in Michigan municipalities topped $10 billion in 2011, and nearly 80% of this debt is tied to retiree health care. And with, as you say, hundreds of Michigan communities facing this problem, John, this begs the question, how did we get here?
Well, it's a good question because lots of people want to finger point and say that it was, you know, massive corruption and incompetence in the city council in Detroit, and that's totally different from what we have here. And that's not a complete story and not even a fair story, because there's also been massive depopulation and macroeconomic trends as well that the state is painfully familiar with. So it's a mistake to sort of say, oh, this is just a one-off for Detroit. We have huge liabilities, especially in the health care. And what is a particular perhaps to certain municipalities is that you can retire at a younger age, particularly if you're a police officer and you put in your time, or a firefighter. You know, it's a highly dangerous job. And so once you've put in your time, they let you take your retirement, which is fair. But the flip side of that is it means that you're on the retiree rolls with that health care coverage for some time, well before Medicare ever kicks in. So there's this bridge period when you're a retiree, but you're not even eligible for even the Medicare part of it.
Is this, as you say, totally fair for someone who has been doing a job like police and fire? I know you found some interesting figures in your research. Ted, I see at the high end of Grand Rapids pension scale, the retired fire chief is getting an annual pension of over $97,000 in 2011. Is this because promises were made that seemed good at the time?
Well, I think the way we put this into historical context is to go back to kind of how Michigan was built, looking at the flourishing of the auto industry post-World War II, established kind of the benchmark for pension, retiree health care benefits, as well as wages. That was followed suit by set the pattern for the kind of contracts that municipalities agreed to. And in simplest terms, again, you had an auto industry that built a state and then an auto industry that nearly folded. And that's kind of the essential dynamic force that put us in this situation. As John indicated earlier, many cities lost a significant population. They lost tax base. They lost tax revenue. But at the same time, they had these debts that they had incurred over decades. And those debts don't just vanish when your revenues go down.
Yeah, and I think that the retirement is a big issue too. And I think we've seen a change in the entire economy of this with the private sector and now the public sector too. So I think, sadly, that the defined benefit pension plan that these people have is going to go the way of obsolescence. I know at the University of Michigan, for example, I'm in a 403B plan, like a 401K plan. And so I think you're going to see a lot of that shifting. I would be very surprised if any new workers get a defined pension now, and it's all going to be 401K, 403B, I would predict.
So here we have this looming problem with folks that worked, you know, put in an honest life's work and expect to have benefits. And here you have cities, for all of these reasons you talked about, that don't have it. At what point does this become a bigger deal? We're paying so much attention to Detroit. When does the focus get turned outside to the rest of the state? When does the warning bell get rung, and who rings it?
It should be ringing now. Detroit is the warning bell. The fact that it's more accelerated in its financial distress means it was the first to file for bankruptcy. But if these debts can't be – I think what happened – look, if you take a relatively affluent city, like let's say you got Ann Arbor, which by the way is woefully behind on its health care obligations, it still has a good enough credit rating with its other finances that it could probably refinance that debt. So if it assuming it doesn't grow,
okay.
If it's just a question of refinancing, it could stretch that out like a mortgage, right? It could play that over 30 years. So if they funded the deficiency over a long period, that's less scary to imagine. It's just adding on a little bit every year.
All right.
The problem is healthcare expenses grow at a supra-inflationary rate. You see, a pension, we can predict how long people are going to live, what the salary is, so you get X percent times Y years, and you can sort of figure out it's a known unknown.
Got it.
As opposed to the healthcare, people live longer. They put you on machines, and you know the longevity is increasing, and so it's just a dramatically increasing expense. So what you're going to see there is they want to share the risk. Right, because the risk is that it goes up and it's expensive. So you'll see cities asking the retirees to carry that risk through, you know, paying. Let's say that the city pays for, you know, 100% or 90% of your health care. You'll see them going to like a 50-50 split. Or
yes.
In really distressed cities, they'll just say, we can't cover this all anymore.
We're done.
Yeah.
So what we have, I think, and you pointed out so skillfully in your piece in Bridge, Ted, we have a problem that pits retirees against taxpayers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's gonna be played out over the next many years, if not decades. And I think it's going to come in the form of contract challenges, legal challenges. Interestingly enough, in California in 2012, two cities overwhelmingly passed referendums that basically claw back pension benefits and retiree health care benefits. That's now working its way through the court system. It's being challenged by unions there, but you know, there's a pretty stark option right there. Municipality puts it on the ballot, voters approve it, and benefits are taken away. Can that be done? I guess we'll find that over many years in the form of court challenges that may end up in the Supreme Court.
And in addition to the legal angle, there are municipalities who have confronted this. There's some down in there's a mayor of Kentucky. I want to say it was Louisville, but I could get it wrong. It could have been Lexington. I apologize for your Kentucky listeners. There's a way of doing this, right? You can do this by, increasing the contributions. They don't have to be complete cancellation, but you can increase the contributions. You can defer vesting for new people in what these benefits are. And as I said, refinancing of the current legacies as well. So there is a way to sort of, you know, share the pain around. But boy, does that require focused leadership. And, you know, some people just don't want to confront the problem. And if you kick it down the road, that's where you hit bankruptcy.
Because I'm not going to be mayor in 20 years, so I still look good to folks today. And then raising taxes is certainly, you know, some folks, Lincoln is squeaking.
Yeah.
They're pinching the penny so hard. And then you slash spending. That means, as we've seen, you eloquently put it in perspective, Ted, people in Grand Rapids pointing to things that are falling by the wayside.
Yeah, whether it's Grand Rapids or I happen to spend some time in Saginaw just to kind of make the point of what happens in a city when it slashes its budget year after year after year. And to make the point pretty simply, the city stopped cutting weeds in vacant lots, you know, hundreds of abandoned vacant lots in the city, and the city says we don't have $290,000 a year to mow this vacant lot. what does that do to the people left in this neighborhood? What's the kind of meta message to people in that neighborhood about what the city cares about the residents there? And what does that do to property values? What does it do to the future of a neighborhood?
Yeah.
There is an end point to how much cutting you can do in a city. It reaches a point where it becomes self-destructive.
That's right. Exactly right. Because Ted's talking about when you can get into a tipping point. And once you cut the services so much, and we're seeing this in the discussion with Detroit right now about should we sell off the Detroit Art Museum, or is that sort of cutting off our, you know, our lifeblood of a new development that's going to attract people to the city and have urban growth. And so you can cut, you can cut, you can cut. But once you reach a certain point, you start to make it an unattractive place for people to live in, and you can actually accelerate an exodus, which is then you get a death spiral of the city.
The death spiral, and all across the country. You look at Stockton, California, other bankruptcy cases. And so it feels like this is the lion lurking right around the corner in Michigan in so many areas. So here's a question. Overall, as we look at Michigan, are there leaders willing to follow what you described in Kentucky? Is this a problem that can be fixed? What's the challenge to city leaders? Let's start with the city leaders of today in Michigan. John?
I would say that you know, it's funny. I think that the bankruptcy of Detroit is almost like a politically transformative moment for our state, and it's making people have the discussions we're having right now. And so before, it's too easy to avoid it. Now I think people will confront it more realistically. I think the cities that have had to go through emergency financial managers have confronted it because they go through the books and say, we have to refinance this debt or we have to change these benefits. And I think that the other municipalities out there that will want to avoid financial oversight will have their leadership step up. Whether they take the challenge or not is a question of personal character, and I don't have special insight on that.
What do you think, Ted?
Yeah, I think it's going to take hard work. It's going to take political commitment. It's going to take, at some level, a sense of cooperation between municipality and union groups. And union groups are going to have to recognize that they have a stake in the future of their city as well as a stake in protecting the benefits that they worked for over many years. And understand that at some point when a city does reach that tipping point, that all these benefits can be fragile and they can be taken away.
And if there's not the bold action, as you put it in your piece in Bridge, Ted, what does that mean for Michigan?
Well, that wouldn't be good news, but I really think that's almost not an option because we're at that point. It's not as if this information is unknown. We're reminded of it every day when the news emanates from Detroit. And you know, as John discussed, I think it's very telling that a city reaches the point where it's talking about auctioning off a world-class collection of art to pay a small portion of its $18 billion in debt. And then what does that say about how the city regards itself and how people outside that city regard a city that's taking art off the wall and, you know, out the door, we're going to sell it? It hasn't made that decision, but I think that it's even contemplating that is pretty sobering.
Here's what you do. If you live in a city and you're concerned about this, is when your council representative has the coffee hall or the town meeting. All that is easy to talk about is the current budget. They say, well, this is what we're voting on, the 2014 budget, and here's our thing, and here's our millage rate, and this is what the tax is going to be. And what you need to do is ask about the future and say, well, that's great. Now, what's going on with the retiree and the healthcare obligation? What's our plan? What's the funding of that? And what's our plan to solve that if it's underfunded? Because that should be something that's discussed today and not buried off in the footnote of the budget. And it's only by having the public engaged and facing these issues that I think our political leaders will have the focus to address them.
So it's
absolutely right.
Conversations like this, articles like Ted's in Bridge. And really, as you say, as Detroit's story continues to unfold, it's a lesson for everyone in Michigan.
Absolutely.
We have been speaking with John Pato, who's a bankruptcy expert from the University of Michigan, and he was joined by Bridge Magazine contributing writer Ted Roloffs. And you can find Ted's piece at bridgemi.com. It's Detroit, coming to a city near you. Thank you so much for talking with us today on Stateside.
My pleasure.
I enjoyed it.